Welcome to this podcast. My name is Katharina Dohm. I'm the curator of the exhibition The Tunnels We Dig by Barbara Wagner and Benjamin de Burka at the Schirn. Through their video works, the artist duo delves deeply into various music scenes to artistically capture their specific cultural context and forms of expression. In doing so, they engage in an intensive collaborative exchange with the respective artists and communities. At the Schirn, the duo is presenting three works, including the new production, Future of Yesterday, which is dedicated to straight-edge hardcore punk. I spoke with Barbara and Benjamin about their artistic work during an artist talk. Enjoy listening. So we are very happy that we had the possibility to work directly with Barbara and Benji. And we started 2 years ago in 2024. Sebastian came from New York and said, what do you think about Barbara Wagner and Benjamin de Burka? I said, oh, wow, I've seen the work, in, like he also did, in Venice 2019 at the Brazilian Pavilion, and I loved it. Should we try to get in contact with them? I said, oh, yeah, sure, we do it. So this was the beginning of the exhibition you are now hopefully happy to see in Halle 2. And they started like saying, yes, we would be interested in working with you. And we are already having a subject in mind, and it's called Straight Edge. And this was the moment immediately Sebastian was like, ha! And I was like in this video call, Straight Edge, what is this? And then it was already, I mean, they were talking about the X on the hand. Now, all those details I explain to you later on, or they explain it. And then ever since, we were on a crazy journey. And then we were already, at that time also already, we knew that we are going to change place from Schirn Römer to Schirn Bockenheim. But I can also tell you, here it makes, yeah, I mean, the surrounding, the building, the initiatives working here, it all works very well together to have especially their work here. But we would have exhibited you also at Schirn Römer. So it's not only because of the building. So we started going into deep research. And now I give it back to you. So we opened up yesterday. How do you feel today after this more or less 2 years of crazy journey?
It's first of all, thank you for having us here with a conversation after the presentation of the work. We like that circumstance of talking to the public a lot. I was asking Katharina Sebastian just now, I mean, what's the format of the conversation? Do we have some time to talk with the public? I mean, if we do, it's going to be very nice if you ask questions, if you have seen the work, the works in exhibition, and if you're interested in anything else.
Yeah, but well, first we start.
Yeah.
Because I have also many questions.
Oh my God.
No, we talk now for some. Yeah, but maybe
Thank you for having this moment. Yeah. And yesterday was very special because we had the presence of the artists that are in the film that was commissioned by Schirn, made with the team of Schirn. So it's really, when you talk about the journey and the intense work we did in the last 2 years, we have to say how Schirn participated in the work. So the team joined, and this is a very rare
circumstance. I think we also have to say, because some of those listeners now possibly not much about your work, and what you said now from the beginning, the artists. So the videos you're going to see in the other space are always are three, as Sebastian already mentioned. And I think what also really impressed me very much in Venice was the dynamics in the video, but also to see what the focus was laid upon, on groups dancing and being acting in front of the camera, and then getting to know that participation is one of the most, it's the most important way of working together with the other side. And they don't say they are actors or they are musicians, they are artists. And I think this is the very important point to make clear from the beginning on. And this was also something that really, yeah, impressed me so much, that it was always to say the people we work together, they consider as artists. So this is something one can, I think, makes a lot about the tension. We maybe later also speak again about, on the one hand, documentation, but on the other hand, it is not documentation. So to come back again to the participation, how you work, how does it, I mean, you made a work on Brazilian Brega, you did a work on spoken art in Toronto. How do you find your ideas? I mean, we asked you, and it was sure we were working in Germany. You had been in contact with German straight edge scene, but how does it, I mean, for some other exhibitions, how do you find your other side, the artist you are laying your focus on?
It depends. It depends, of course, no? And also, in certain circumstances, there's a dynamic of it being kind of inseparable from a social political moment in time, or how we see where we see things are going in the dynamics and political dynamics of the place, you know. So I mean, we were actually discussing yesterday, like, straight edge is also very existent in Brazil. There's a very old straight edge festival in São Paulo that I went to, and it was very interesting. But it almost finished, right? It started again because there's dynamic, there's a desire for it again. And I was super impressed. This was after Barbara had initially became super interested in straight edge from when she was in Berlin in 22, I think, going to concerts with a great friend of hers there and finding herself feeling extremely comfortable and extremely included. But you can talk about that a bit more. My experience going to Verdurada, which is like a, how would you call it? It's kind of like a vegetables or something along those lines. It's like, it's green, you know, it's a greenery. It's kind of like translated. And I was super impressed because you had two bands playing, and then the curator of the festival came out and said, okay, now we're going to sit down and have a conversation about the dictatorship. And the whole place that was full, they basically just sat down on the ground in the middle of the concert and listened to an hour and a half about this woman's book that she brought out on the experience of the disappearance of her father and everything else. And then, okay, right, and then the concert was back on. And the dynamic of ages was amazing. This is the one thing I noticed most of all, was like there were kids and there were adults and there were people over in the corner skating, and there was veggie burgers to be had, and there was no alcohol, obviously. I mean, nobody had any interest whatsoever in that dynamic at this festival, a one-day festival. And I was just like, wow. I mean, I'd never been to a concert before where it's like 1 minute's like, ah, and everyone's moshing, and the next minute they're all sitting on the ground listening to this woman talking, you know? And that, like, with such deep concentration and interest, and I was like, this is super, super new for me. What an amazing dynamic. But back to your point, I think straight edge and hardcore are kind of resurging, you know, and maybe it's a post-pandemic kind of question, or maybe a desire to sort of move away from mediated image or sound in relation to a certain amount of autonomy and a certain amount of analog of processes. So like tape cassettes and a certain amount of nostalgia is returning. So, I mean, the T-shirts you showed of the, you know, the youth of today
Yeah, Sebastian showed at the opening his old T-shirts from his...
From the 90s.
Yeah, from the 90s, from bands that were quite famous at that time.
Mm. And the aesthetic.
And there's still this reference between the generations and...
Yeah, and I think the aesthetic of today's bands is still playing along those lines. It's like there's a graphic nature to it. yeah.
There was a merch yesterday. Of course, I had to buy one from the band. The band was performing also in the video and also tonight, yesterday night here. So this is why we also gave everything.
And yeah, we also found that as well when we went to the Cologne Fest, mm-hmm. when we were here.
I'm older than Sebastian, but still this period of straight edge just went by myself. What do you say, passed by? I didn't notice. In the end, when I got more and more into the research, I then found out, maybe he was straight, because then I could later on decipher those codes, what he was wearing, and then there were some other bands that were connected to the straight edge scene. But what I also found very striking when we started working together on this scene, and I was like, no alcohol, no meat, vegan, vegetarian life. This is all kind of mainstream today, but it was the exclusive right to be straight edge at that time. So how did it change? There was also some questions we had. And then I also understood Barbara's point so well, to be feeling accepted in this group of people, because we went to Darmstadt, Oettinger Villa, and there are all the different generations, all different backgrounds being together, enjoying the night, enjoying the music. And that was also very new to me. Thank you. No, it was. I think this is also something one has to point out, because I don't know if you all have seen the film and how those different generation work together. I think this was also something you were really interested in.
At the same time, I'm thinking on how to answer your question about how we find the artist or the subject, or how we get to engage in a certain specific research. And I'm thinking of sobriety as something that I was really fascinated with when I started to understand what the concerts I was going to were about, because I didn't know. I was just feeling I was just in the experience of that direct contact between the band and the audience. Like, of course, sound is what you experience, but then the presence and attention of people with each other. And I didn't understand immediately that had to do with people that are not under the effect of any psychotropic. And it makes me think of our initial work on Carnaval, for example, and the whole idea of forgetting reality. No? Mm-hmm. I mean, how we connect popular parties, traditions, and histories of oppression to music production or popular manifestations we were interested in the beginning of our practice. And I think that was really liberating for me to understand that the idea of having fun being sober is something we can learn from with the kids. And I say kids, but it's like they are not that young. I mean, in the film we worked with people who, in the whole process, from 12, 13 to 25, but then their parents got super involved. So it's across generations. Mm-hmm. But learning with the younger ones is, for me, the experience that was really new in this research. how they respect different forms of knowledge, and how authority is also suspended somehow. It's really interesting. I'm still processing the work. No, it's just also finished. Yeah. It just opened, so I'm still learning with the film.
Yeah. It's also a good point to make. The final cut was still done, I think, until you came here. There were always new versions of the new final version.
Adjustments too.
Because you were really working just until the opening to finish the film. And when you now say we are now seeing and processing, this is also, for me, the same that you see. I think we have seen the film like of surely 10, 20 times, but still now I see much more details in this first camera movement. I don't know if you have seen it in the garage, and all those signifiers, if you want to speak in terms of art history, that you have all those, the cars and the super aesthetic surfaces, and not only cars, but bicycles, the music in the back, the different generations, the group getting prepared for the concert is going to be followed. So, yeah, I can smell already the garage now. One can... It's a lot of atmosphere, and also the... Yeah, I mean, we see it once, each time again, I can see some more details and something which is there in the film for sure for a reason. But I just see it now. So we are still also, like you, we are getting closer with the work and also getting more and more to understand how it all comes together. Of course, you have a script. Maybe you could also share how you started working with those very young protagonists. But not very young, some were quite young, like 15 or something
17,
like 17, 16, up to 17. 20. So how was this going on when you came here?
Yeah, it was fun.
Slow.
Slow at the beginning.
It was beautifully slow. Like they would impose their time, and that was really interesting.
Yeah.
And of course
I think this has also to do with the autonomy. I mean, because when we started getting in contact with the scene, Cornelia is here, she was our research assistant doing a lot of work in order to that we get in contact and could really work, and we already felt that it's not easy to convince them to be part of a video or of an artwork and present to be straight edge and to consume straight edge. It was really like one really had to prove that you're really interested and that you don't want to take anything or...
Yeah, there's a very interesting dynamic because, we're talking about an underground culture, respectively, you know. If it's DIY in the sense that they do it for yourselves, it's not about becoming famous, let's say, you know. So we were lucky enough in many respects because within the scene, in instances we met very open-minded people, but they're all like a bit like, no, it's not really for me because maybe it was very difficult to kind of properly explain that we're not here to talk about the scene of straight edge. We're not here to make
a documentation.
A documentation of the of Darmstadt, or to expose anybody, or to, you know, make them fragile in any respect. So within that, we were lucky to kind of engage with in many instances with Blinded and Nick and Odo, and they're all very, very, very creative artists. And not, I mean, again, when we say artists, in this instance, not just music, you know.
Yeah.
It's like customizing their cars because of the family interest, producing tapes, producing drawings, artworks, zines, merch. Yeah, this is designed by Nick himself. Mm-hmm. And again, you can see the car influence. I always think it's like the front... You know, and that's maybe a little bit out of step, maybe out a bit unusual in the straight edge hardcore scene, because cars might not be necessarily connected. But I mean,
also
I found
the ecology idea of
ecology is important, you know. And again, I think as well the straight edge aspect is sometimes misunderstood or misread as being only about my body, I want to be fit or clean or, you know, January, whatever you call it, I'd forgotten this, kind of dry January. It's less about that. I mean, I think it's more about not necessarily allowing yourself to be involved in contamination culture, intoxication culture, because it doesn't do any good, you know, not just necessarily for you, but for society as well. So if it has a negative impact on you and then you bring that negative impact to other things, it's not cool. So they see the world and they see alcohol and all these other drugs creating so much problems. And, I mean, straight edge is about positive living, really, you know, positive thinking, first of all, for yourself. So when we met them, they were like, it's very rare, in fact, these days that I come across 17 or 20 something year olds that are, you know, that are so attentive and like listening, going, yeah, this is really interesting, but I see things differently from you. Mm-hmm. And I'm like this and like that. Instead of kind of going, sorry, what did you say? So, I mean, I was always interested in that dynamic as well.
Yeah, they have a very clear idea and position of what they want to be and of what, of what they are in connection to the society.
Yeah.
And I always had the, like later on, I was like, yeah, sure. It also has to do with the autonomy that gives them a lot of strength. Mm. So if we like say, as Basti said, we're doing it for the fun of it. It's not about becoming famous, becoming rich. Of course, these are all like structures for music business in a capitalistic world, but they are not part of this world and they don't want to be part of this world. And I also, I mean, maybe you can say this is not a, it's not important, but I later on thought, of course, like Blinded or One or all those protagonists in the video, they were always very hesitant because they don't want to speak for the whole scene. So it's also to be a group and to be, if one focus is put on this band, then again, also a hierarchy could come up. Maybe it has to do also with that they would just want to be one scene and not speaking in,
For sure.
Yeah, I think this happens with all the works that we make. In conversation with artists that eventually really want to work with us. I mean, they decide that people who were not interested or who don't.
But how do you think you get the trust? Because it's about trust.
I think there's a specificity of working together. Like when we, maybe a good example is and I think we told Cornelia that we started to work in the region of Darmstadt because of the Oettinger Villa. We knew it was super important, but also following the recommendations of Peach Steinert, that has this fantastic zine online called Volume Magazine. There's a lot of information that's going to be helpful for the research on Straight Edge in the region of Hessen through Volume Magazine for the next months. So we are in Darmstadt, and then Pete was presenting to us like the possibilities in terms of music, in terms of distinguishing also the styles. He himself made a documentary on that. Amazing. And it was through the documentary that we learned also about Blinded. It's important to say that Blinded just got to become a band. Like, they are together, they're having different projects for many times, all the projects in music, but the hardcore Straight Edge band called Blinded had its first presentation last year in February. And I don't know exactly in which month they opened for Earth Crisis in their tour. In
June.
In June, eh?
Just four months later, they were the opening act of one of the legendary Straight Edge bands, Earth Crisis, in the Schlachthof Wiesbaden, which is much larger than Oettinger Villa in Darmstadt. But Villa Oettinger in Darmstadt is very important, and all those... Yeah, Straight Edge person say they have when they do a tour, they have Paris, London, Darmstadt.
That's right.
But we had conversations with people who would not necessarily want to make an artwork together because they are busy, they work, they study, they would be interested, but it's like not now, but they, or a little bit more like a. Maybe I'm not the right person to talk about it. I don't want to be so much to the fore. I want to be more behind the scenes. So what I think happened with the people we worked with for Future of Yesterday is that they really enjoyed the idea of making a film together. They wanted to do it. And their desire to do it made the film. And I mean, they participated in every aspect of it, like thinking about
let me know
which songs, how we would go from one to the other. I mean, it's a very simple structure in the end. No, we have.
Yeah, please tell us more about it. Because you also said the songs, which is also very interesting for you here. There is not a classical dialogue. I mean, I don't want to say that the other videos are classical dialogue forms, but being singing Brega songs or presenting spoken art poetry. But here, there's almost less dialogue, but the dialogue that is there sounds like Alltagssprache, like, hey, dude, how are you? Oh, nice, you have a tape. I mean, like this, so it's rather this atmosphere, I had the impression, but of course it's has a meaning or
first
function.
Time. I think this is the first time in any of our films that we have loose dialogue that's not scripted, or let's say not scripted. I mean, we don't script dialogue.
No.
If there's dialogue, it comes from a mediation. If it's coming from the radio, or if it's coming from a television or an interview, that's not us that's taking it. You know, like in Bye Bye Deutschland, for example, or you know, these are the everything that's in our films through script comes from the letter, from the lyrics of the music. It's always been the case, and or for example. Maybe in Fala that in sorry in Tejemoto Santo there's some preaching. I mean, we didn't script it. I mean, we can't. We're not asking anyone to say anything that isn't somehow natural to them. So that was actually a fun moment because the use of this other camera is something that again is a little bit nostalgic for skate videos and things from the 90s. And I mean, Odo uses it a lot, and we saw. I mean. He opened up his archives of them doing exactly that, you know, putting the instruments in the van and going to the concert and then sometimes setting it up there at the side of the concert. But filming in a hardcore concert is usually not really welcomed by people who are there in the audience, for example, unless it's someone that's really in the scene and they know it's a person like Josie Hoffman, for example, who
famous photographer.
Yeah, fantastic photographer. Yeah. So, there's a dynamic there that... that has to do with how self-mediation, so in a way. And in this instance, we did have a cinematographer, but they were all telling him how to film it and what he should film. And and you should try more zooming in because that's what we do, you know?
Really?
So me and Barbara were just kind of like,
whoa.
It was a new experience for us as well and for the whole cinema team because there's people standing around that are hired to be there and they don't know what to do because there's a man with a camera. We don't have a monitor to refer to what the images are like. We can't say this is good, this is bad. But the kids were kind of looking over this. The kids, I shouldn't say that, but I got used to it. It's like, it's just affection, you know, when I say that. But they're like direct. Everyone has a word. And it was like pure chaos, but it was also pure chaos in a very rhythmic way, in a way that actually we really enjoy because it means that there is exactly that negotiation between people from the world of cinema that have to step outside of their usual roles of like, you know, cinema is very hierarchical in that nature. And next minute, all of this power is put in the hands of these young people that are making music to say what they want to have done and how they want to have it done. And me and Barbara are just mediating that relationship, you know. So... Our works are always a little bit around that
mediation,
line.
This is something also I found very interesting, the whole term and the idea of mediation, because I think this is also something that, of course, comes up in all of your works, in the moment you work with artists together, but from another world, let's say, from another idea, background. And I think this is most of your work, to mediate, but also to have these moments of coming together, that different worlds come together. So
absolutely.
How was it? I mean, there, of course, a straight edge world was different.
There were some beautiful aspects to it that I found delightful. Like the cinematographer was the first time we worked with him, is Damien Elliott, and he comes from Belfast, but he comes
quite famous from Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
I mean, they don't work with only a cameraman. They work with I want to say really...
He's super humble. I'd say in the world of art, maybe he'd be known for making some works for Jared Byrne, you know, as a cinematographer. But he works across the board, so he'll be making ads here and feature-length films there. But he's very, very humble, so when it comes to fame, he would be like, oh, because he's also from this, he comes from punk and hardcore.
And this was also the reason, surely, he was interested in
this. Is how he got into film, this is how he became who he is today, you know. And so when we got the VX, because they, Odo has his own, but when we got the VX from rental, in a box, and he opens it up and he's just like looking at this thing that he used to use so much when he was young, you know, and it's like almost like a tear rolling down. It's like, yeah, it's back to this now, you know, and he was like, he was really happy.
So in the end, it's for everybody who is actually connected to those, let's say, I don't want to say videos, but it's a huge work crossing over generations, and you can step back out of your role. I mean, you're the cameraman, and can also maybe connect to another world again. Maybe it's the past, but maybe it's also, I mean, it's the future. It's the future of yesterday. Maybe we didn't say that. Where does this title come from, actually? Well, future of Yesterday is the real title for
the name
our work.
It's the name of the song that's in the film. I mean, actually, it's The Future of Yesterday, but We kind of wanted to refer to our understanding of time. And I think all our films do a little bit, but in this instance, it's more about this reflecting back to the 90s, for example. The parents also reflecting back to Americana, American culture, and how in the 70s, you know, this kind of customizing vans. And so they also, by the way, the parents are vanners. They do classic car organizations, and they have a garage in which they rent spaces for other people's classic cars. And they have a whole bunch of friends all over Germany and beyond that gather to you know, make a competition. So the van
He's polishing his van.
And he's known as Putzi, you know.
Putzi.
To his friends, which is great. So he's polishing the van, so it makes sense. He knows exactly that's what he should be doing in the scene. And
the mother is preparing the prince for the for the T-shirts.
Yeah.
And I love the moment when they go, she just gives the box to them. And surely this I have seen not the first time, not the second time, but the third time I saw it. I said, this is the moment when she gives the... And you understand... In the term of DIY aesthetics and the straight edge, this moment that the parents supporting the children, and when they were here, they were all here yesterday, the whole family, and then they told, and I said, you must be so proud, and they're like, yes. And you know, we spoke, I mean, we were, because they were still reflecting also on the moment, why did our children became straight? Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, I think my grandfather, he was an alcoholic, so, and alcohol had a whole, And then they said, you know, when we got children, we didn't decide to drink no alcohol. But friends of ours, they did. We drank alcohol, and we had party, and she's in the carnival, the mother very strong. Mm-hmm. But we never said that they, so they continued their lifestyle, and she said, and we never opposed anything to them, or we never said, you have to do this or that. Mm. So the freedom is on the one hand there, and they said, well, it's just, they're just part of it, and being very supportive. And then he said, and when they, because they have really all history cars, old timers, and then he said, yeah, well, and then they just go on a concert, like in this video, and I know they go to Stuttgart, so of course I look if the oil is there or enough water so that they get there. And I give the box with all the T-shirts. So it's the whole film also is very, I mean, when you know this, it's also very private and also very emotional. And I'm missing the word now. It's like, it's a very lovely, strong relationship, what you can see. The more you get into the detail of the film. So this is also another story laying underneath, I think.
Yeah, and I like when it becomes clear in the film how the process happens, because how could we do that without their collaboration? Mm. It's like when we were showing Rise for the first time in Brazil in 2018, I remember a whole conversation about collaboration that we had with some interesting people like Hélio de Menezes, who later curated a biennial in São Paulo too. He came to talk and visited the show, and then we talked about it. And then he said, I remember him saying how some people would be confused about who scripts what in the films we make. We don't, because this is something that is confusing.
Yeah.
When you work together, I mean, in between the two of us, I get super confused of who initiated what, because you share, you go to a certain point, and then you're afraid, and then the other one takes it, and then you go together somewhere you wouldn't go alone. It's really, that's part of it, no?
But do you feel these moments, I mean, it needs to be comfortable to deal with these moments, and it's obviously sometimes not?
It's normally uncomfortable.
It's never comfortable.
Yeah.
It's never comfortable.
I mean, I didn't want to use this word, but it's...
But it is.
It's always fun.
Fun, but also
but
now
never
the...
never comfortable.
Uncomfortable discussions about authorship and who decides?
Yeah, and this is the conversation in the arts, of course. And if you are working in this semi-ethnographic world, and then I come from journalism, and I think this is a problem, a beautiful problem. And I also have to say that I'm really happy with the presence of Wendelin van Oldenborg in the audience, someone who really... I mean, my family now, I can say, but my master in many ways, and meu amor. I learned so much with Wendelin, how I could be an artist coming from the field of journalism.
Mm-hmm. Like, there was one of your questions, how can documentation, or how can it be, how can it go into the art world?
Yeah. It, and I think very much so. And it was working, assisting Vane, and then learning how she researches, how she begins her interests, and how that can be art, can be a conversation in the art world, was what opened up my mind to experiment. And what I want to say about the collaboration and uncomfortable thing is the. It is very intimate. What you see there on screen is part of the life and the art of the people you are, that is in front of the camera. But of course, that can only happen if there was more than a... it's not allowance or awareness. How do you say that? It's almost a legal term when you talk about taking the image of someone.
Copyright.
No. Consent. That's
consent.
It. That's it. Because I think some discussions are about consent. I mean, did this person authorize? I mean, how did they accept? Do they know?
Are they aware?
Are they aware? Do they know that this work is going to be shown here or there? And I think we embrace this as almost the thing that the work is about. So for the artists we worked with for Future of Yesterday, they knew from the beginning about the exhibition at Xi'an. It's not that we come from Brazil in Darmstadt and are looking for... No?
And also that it's just beginning with Xi'an as well, that there's going to be other moments and other dynamics that we can discuss when and where, and also cinema festivals and what it means. So they're aware. I mean, of course, you know, it's... Where? I mean, we don't know. Nobody can really tell where or what it means to where it goes. And it's often conflicting for me that, you know, because sometimes when we show a work made in Brazil in a European context or in the United States or, you know, another place, people read it differently. And it's sometimes very hard to mediate that, you know.
It's again the question of mediation.
Yeah.
Huh? So we are again in transformation or translation as well.
Yeah.
And because also the cultural context.
Mm-hmm. But it's not really in the end for me to be able to say, no, you shouldn't think of it like that, or you should. Mm. That's why, again, the works need to be kind of left open, and because everyone comes from some form of, you know, context or conditioned way of thinking because of their own experiences in life. So I can't mediate that, you know. And my favorite audience is the accidental ones, the ones that were maybe, what's that place over there? And then they go in and they come out and they're thinking about it for hours later. That's great, you know.
But I think also that, I mean... You start with a transformation and translation between you two. Then you start, I mean, then it's getting more and more when you invite the other artist to participate, the cinematographic view on the whole. And then I think that from the beginning on, your works are always very open because there are so many systems being connected, and also via the film or via the video, I think also mediated in the end, you know? So I think when you go over and see the space, I can immediately think, yes, sure, I can also see this in the cinema. And of course, as we said, in the cinema, the people, of course, have a totally different reception or openness towards what they're seeing as when you're in this white cube. And it was so funny, we had interviews shortly before the opening, and I was talking about the white cube, and then the interviewer, the journalist said, "What is a white cube?" I was like, "What? You don't know what is a white cube?" And then I was like, "Oh yeah, I'm so in my system." So explain a white cube. Well, perfect situation for contemporary art. And then you're just like, "Oh yeah, okay, let's think about this again. What is the perfect system or the perfect space for contemporary art? The white cube?" And we don't have a white cube here. Obviously, of course, we have a black floor and white walls, but yeah. It's still a place and a space that has already a connotation or meaning and whatever. So, now I lost track.
Yesterday was really interesting. Yesterday there was this moment that's beautiful to see, like the crowd that comes to Sheeran, and then those who are interested, the friends of the artist in the film, and our crew members, who are people who work in cinema, but coming to see their work exhibited here. I mean, it was beautiful to see the interest of so many different instances. Why is Sheeran interested in that world that's just there?
Yeah.
And then why do we come here to make that come closer? This is interesting.
But do you think, to go back to the straight edge also, I mean, you selected some songs. I have to go and come back to that because... follow...
What makes the film in the end, you know? It's their work, so they have...
Did they choose also the songs that being connected to some generations and ideas? I mean, maybe you could shortly sum up what happens with the song.
It kind of came through a combination, really, because... I mean, of course, we shared ideas that we had. You know, when we go to the garage and we see this, like, this American, like, idea of freedom and liberty through the open road and the gas guzzling vehicles and, you know, customizing your car and bringing it across the plains. Mm. I mean, this is also born in the same period as punk, really. So this idea of freedom is kind of inherent in both of these cultures. And, you know, there's a car... garage, and then there's in the same space they're rehearsing, or you know, how do you call it, rehearsing and practicing and producing merch and thinking and so on, and two different movements coming from the same time frame with very different results, and the parents kind of being a little bit, you know, unhappy about what they experienced in their youth as an eternal freedom, and recognizing it now as kind of limited for their kids, and their kids looking back a little bit, you know, having a nostalgic feeling for wanting to return to analogous processes and be more clear in the moment and be more respectful with people around you, more positive thinking, kind of. It's kind of somewhere in between those two things that seem to be right now kind of stuck. I mean, because I don't know, it's like you have Trump in power now in the United States. He comes from the same
heteromasculism is something being discussed. I think I pronounced it wrong, but petromasculine, yeah. And this is also one question in my final question, then we open up. When you see the straight edge scene now, there is the older straight edge scene being still here, presented by the twins, more or less. Yeah. The original, or the Yeah, the original scene. And then there's a new scene. Do you think it has a connection, for example, to the pandemic, that it came up again? And I think more important also, I think this is also one thing you pointed out, also the way they work, the DIY, the making tapes, and especially making tapes and not, I mean, they also have playlists probably on a digital file, but still this, not fetishism, but this focus on DIY scene, getting back, it's not only nostalgic, I think. Well, what do you think is, I mean, this is my final question, why the straight edge scene might be also something very important now, today?
I don't think it's just straight edge, but I think it's a hardcore and all punk scene in general. No, it's analog. Like the zine is really important. Stickers, t-shirts, printed t-shirts. And I saw last night the merch of the tapes and so on and so forth. Hats. Yeah. It's kind of it's like, again, it's customizing. You know, it's kind of, we had that moment. Again, it's something to do with that creativity that you express outwardly, and it's your own, but at the same time, you project it outwards. No, it's like airbrushing your car. Like nowadays, you look, what have you got if you've not got a silver or a black or a white car, and that's it, and they're all the same. And where did we go wrong? I mean, in essence, like now you don't have a mixtape that you give to a friend. I mean, I can share a Spotify playlist with you. It's not the same. It's not the same thing. And it's not yours. It's never going to be, you know, because you're hiring it. So at some point, all of these things have been removed from our, from our, you know,
property or,
physicality, and you hire them.
Yeah.
And it's, even the production of music, your own music is hired out to Spotify, for example, who earn from it. And so, I don't know, I think
it's
control,
maybe.
It's control. Yeah. It's about autonomy and control. So, even if you do something badly, at least you're doing it yourself and you're not having it just being given to you, you know. I think the skate scene,
but the idea of talent, it was really nice. We had beautiful conversations with them about what it is to be a professional musician or not, the idea of like being trained, or like they're all studying and working. So this is also beautiful to understand. I mean, I think as many of the artists we work with in our films, I mean, they are learning how to work in the arts. They are, that's the case of Stars on the Courses, for example. Mm-hmm. It's very much the topic of that work, like labor in in the arts. So I think this became, I think, I was really fascinated with them talking about how they love what they do. And then I think what Cornelia got from Basti, the idea of fun. The idea of fun is not, it's funny because it's not about, it's not about not being serious. Right? They take it super seriously, like to have fun, but then to have fun as in doing that as amateurs, as like loving that. And then the idea of talent, like they were explaining to us, like Nick is the drummer of Blinded, but the guitarist of One, and vocalist also, right? And then Odo is singing in Blinded and playing the bass in One. So they are changing these roles all the time.
Nick taught Odo how to scream.
It happens, and I think...
He unlocked his scream, that's what he said. Yes, Nick unlocked my scream.
Unlocked my scream.
I loved it.
Yeah, it's beautiful, that the unlocking the scream. But also this thing of, like, they explained to us how they just wanted to have a band, and they had to do that with themselves. So Nick had to learn how to play the drums. I mean, he doesn't consider himself maybe... like to be as good at that as he is in the guitar, for example, but it's not the point. And I think maybe you could also talk about it in with us, Sebastian and Lucas, about how the this idea of being the best at, I mean, the idea of virtuosity is not there, you know? It has to do with so many other layers. And in the film, for example, you see them supporting the bands of the region. Mm-hmm. So spiral.
Spiral, yeah.
And then this is another layer to the DIY. It's about supporting their own.
Supporting and protecting, I think, right?
And making it sustainable. Yeah. I think it's about sustainability. And then we did understand that very well when we worked with the Landless Workers Movement for Fala da Terra. Also, like how other strategies to survive that outside. What this I think became also part of the work when you think about the industry of music or the industry of cinema or what it is to be in the arts. This is somehow there also.
And what is I think also important again to point out is the strategies of survival or the strategies of being an artist are there and you see them, but what you always said, what I find also very important is they don't need us. They don't need the white cube art space because they are still there. They are independent of that, but we have you focus them and you bring them to us to see and get involved or get into mediation and translation.